The first step in getting closer to God is to realize that you need to or that you want to. And the second step in getting closer to God is to realize that it's possible. I want to encourage you to check out my book, Getting Closer to God, Anthologies from the Forefront Trilogy, Book 2. I think this will really be helpful to you in your pursuit of the Lord and help you understand what I learned over the first 30 plus years of my life as a believer, as a minister, and as a missionary in a lot of the countries of the earth. Check it out. Anthologies from the Forefront, Book 2, Getting Closer to God. It's on Amazon.
Welcome to From the Forefront, an FX Missions podcast. Stories about courageous souls who felt the call of missions and obeyed. Hi, Scott McClelland here with your From the Forefront podcast from FX Missions. We're really excited today to have Gret Glier on with us. Hi, Gret.
Hey, Scott. Good to be here.
Hey, man. Thanks for taking some time out. I would imagine that time these days is in short supply for you, at least some days. Am I right?
Maybe comparatively, yeah. It does seem like it's busier than other times. But yeah, sometimes I wonder how busy I am overall when I really sit down and look at it. Yeah, I don't know.
I get that, man. Well, I have noticed you've been busy in the social space out there. I saw recently that you were on the TED stage, and I have that queued up to watch.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to it yet.
Well, you'll enjoy it. It's only a few minutes.
You've been out there, man.
Yeah.
You've been on the TED stage. You've been doing your thing. You guys, I mean, I would do a terrible job. My detail orientation would betray me on getting anything usable out there. So what have you been doing, and what are you guys up to?
I'll just kind of back up a little bit and say I spent 3 years living in Malawi, Africa, which is just a small country in Southeast Africa. And then when I came back, I started an organization called DonorSee. And DonorSee is a way for donors to see where their money goes when they donate. So if you donate to a little girl in India who needs hearing aids, as a donor, a few days after you make your donation, you'll get a video of that girl hearing for the first time. And so we do this with all sorts of stuff. It's not just hearing aids, but we help people see again with glasses or surgeries, and we help people get shelter and things like that. Mm. So DonorSee was launched about a year and a half ago, and recently what we've been doing is raising some funds to really take DonorSee to the next level, and we've had a really successful go at it the last week and a half or so. And yeah, we're chugging along, and it's an exciting time of growth, and a lot of good stuff is happening. So yeah, there's plenty to get into.
Man, I'm saying, well, I remember, I mean, I think you and I had some contact. We tried to get on a podcast together a couple of years ago. Schedules, for whatever reason, didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew you from that. I've been observing the DonorSee stuff. Of course, I knew you'd lived abroad a little bit. Now, DonorSee, for those of you who are driving, do not make notes. This will be in the podcast notes. But DonorSee is DonorSee, like donor and see, like to see through your eyes, correct?
That's it, yeah.
Okay, DonorSee.
One word.
Now, you guys really took off, is what it looked like to me. It looked like you were sensing something that was needed, and you jumped in there. What happened? Tell us a little bit about the story about how DonorSee got from the drawing board to where it is today.
Right. So I was in Malawi for 3 years, and while I was in Malawi, I was looking into doing, I wanted to find a way to communicate to people back at home, like my friends and family. I wanted to show them kind of some of the stuff I was seeing on an everyday basis. Malawi, I lived there for 3 years, and like two of the 3 years I was there, it was the poorest country on the planet. It's always in the bottom five. And the people there are just very, very, very poor. And it's hard for my friends here in America to really conceptualize and empathize and understand the lives of these people. And so I wanted a way to do that. And so what I started doing when I was in Malawi is I would have these small little projects. I would say like, hey, there's this baby this baby is starving, like literally. And if you would like to help save this baby's life, you can donate $50 and we'll save the baby's life. And so people would donate $50. We would provide formula milk for the baby and it would get better. And there, and my friends back at home would say, oh my gosh, like I can't believe my money did that for a real human being. It was just unfathomable to them. So that kept happening. So I would do these small little things for my friends to get more involved. And everything was getting funded so quickly. And then it became like, okay, well, what else can I fund? What bigger stuff can I do? And so I started doing bigger projects, $9,000 projects. And then my last year, I did this $100,000 project to build a girls' school there. And it was really fun. And thousands of people got involved and donated and helped spread the word about that. And so right now, there's this fully sustainable girls' school in rural Malawi that have 120 girls in attendance there. And that was all because of this like crowdfunding stuff I was getting into. Wow. And so I was in, I'm not like a big brand name charity. I'm just Greg Lyer over in Malawi by myself, kind of working on these things. But there was so much excitement because usually when people give to a charity of some kind, they don't get a lot of feedback on how that money is being spent. Sometimes it's difficult to do that. Sometimes charities do need to work on being more transparent. And so on the other hand, they were giving to Greg Lyer through the internet and they were seeing exactly how their money was changing people's lives. And it was just so exciting. And so I thought, well, how can I take this method of storytelling and have it replicated in other parts of the world? So instead of just having Greg Lyer in Malawi, what if there's other people in other parts of the world who could also do the same thing? So if someone wants to fight sex trafficking in Thailand and they want to post projects about that, or if they want to work in the slums of India, or if they want to help in Haiti after a big hurricane, what if there was one platform where all of this stuff could happen? And so that was the conception for DonorSea. That was kind of the dream. Like, what if these connections that I was making in Malawi, just me and my friends, what if I could replicate that in a bunch of different places? And yeah, it's one of those things where it came out and people were like, I can't believe this didn't exist before. That's crazy. I can't believe like there wasn't before DonorSea, there wasn't a way to give money to people overseas and see where your money goes. That's insane. But like here we are, this was in 2016 when we launched. And now all of a sudden people can do that. And I think it just was like one of these things where it was about time that it happened.
Wow. So timing and opportunity, all those things came together.
Yeah.
And a little bit of vision mixed in there.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you know, isn't that like any idea whose time has come? When you look back, you say, what kept that on hold for so long?
Yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
What kept that from, that's when you know something has arisen that, you know, was just waiting for the right recipe. And it sounds like you guys got it. You launched in 16. You've done a number of projects. I've seen some of what you've done. Tell us about the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. What's been happening?
Well, yeah. So in a few months ago, what we really found our sweet spot, because we've been doing all sorts of different projects, and a few weeks ago we made DonorSea a lot more personal by imposing a $450 max on our projects. So we talked about in your other podcast,
uh-huh,
the Leadership Moment podcast. We talked about how people are living on $2 a day. So you hear, well, what can you do with $400 or $200? Well, if you're making $2 a day, that's quite the injection of funds for you. And so for these people who are living in other parts of the world, $400, $200, these are ways to vastly improve someone's life. And sometimes that means providing them with a wheelchair or hearing aids or glasses or school books or even like minor surgeries, things like that, cleft palates, all sorts of stuff. So we made DonorSea a lot more personal. When you go to DonorSea, you go and you can give to people. And so with that, we were finding that, okay, now we've really found the thing that we are. Like, we found our essence. We're a platform that connects people to people. And once we found that, we decided, okay, it's time to really amp this thing up. And so in order to do that, we needed to raise some capital. And so I was talking to different folks about the best way to do that. And I came across, actually someone brought to my attention a platform called WeFunder. So WeFunder is kind of like Kickstarter, but on Kickstarter, when you are trying to raise funds, you're like an artist and you give a CD for the funds. It's a little bit different. But for WeFunder, if you invest funds through WeFunder, you get an equity stake in the company. So we've been running this WeFunder campaign the last week and a half. And I'll tell you what, it has the response has literally blown me away. I can't tell you how unbelievably surprised I am by how much support we've received already.
Wow. Now, let me ask you, how long will your WeThunder campaign be scheduled to run?
Well, at the moment, the campaign has a ceiling of $107,000, and we're already pretty close to that. I'm not allowed to get into specifics, but I mean, it was supposed to run for 6 months, but we're right at the cusp. So it's looking like it's not going to last much longer. We're thinking I'm being advised that it might be a good idea to raise more than that ceiling. And so we're looking into doing something with that, but that's not guaranteed. Yeah. So yeah, there's not much time left.
Well, I was going to offer to preempt my normal schedule and put you at the first of June for the publication, but I think you'll already be there by then. So we're going to be celebrating by the time this podcast is heard.
Yeah.
Look for celebrations to be out there.
Yes.
And I can see where you might lift that ceiling a little bit. And hopefully you'll send me a link here. I'll go take a look at WeThunder because I'd be interested personally to take a closer look at that. That's very cool. Now, the WeThunder piece is to raise capital for really the construction of systems and processes at DonorC and, you know, the plumbing and all that kind of stuff, the internet plumbing. What else? What are some of the top things you're targeting to raise money to specifically do?
Yeah, so we're basically going to split the money in two. Half of the money will go to what you're talking about, the plumbing, as you called it.
Yeah.
And that will mostly be, we're really going to focus on mobile website optimization. And the reason for that is because the other half of the funding is going to go to discovering a digital marketing strategy. So what that means is you can make these extremely tailored, focused ads using Facebook. You can say, I want to target this very, very, very specific type of person. And I want to only target them if they visited the DonorC website before. And if they've considered making it, you know, you can just make it so, so specific and say, I'm only going to target these people. And so the goal is to say, well, if, you know, DonorC takes a small percentage for every donation. So the goal would be, every time DonorC spends $5 on advertising, we make $10 in return. And that $10, of course, is being used to help people all over the world. So the goal with the digital marketing strategy would be to find a scalable marketing strategy. And so every time we spend $5, we earn $10. And if we do that, that puts us in a really good position to raise venture capital money from serious investors who would be willing to invest quite a bit more once they see some of these numbers.
Right. Well, I know what you're talking about, the granularity of Facebook advertising. I've done a little bit of promotion over there, nothing too broad or extensive, but I have noticed what you're saying. You can make it as specific as you want. And for that reason, the recipe has escaped me. When you find out, I need to talk to you about your secrets of promotion there at some point. Not the special sauce, but maybe some hints. So very cool. That sounds great. Sounds like you're really getting some traction. I noticed some of your updates that says we've raised 10,000, we've raised 20,000, whatever.
Yeah.
We've raised 50,000. So I know you're making a lot of progress. And again, I appreciate your courage, man, stepping out, getting a vision, putting the stuff together. How long was it from the time that you started to conceive the possibility of doing something like DonorC until the time between you did that and when you launched in 16?
The simple answer is 9 months. I came up for the idea in January of 2016. I was talking to someone on the phone and just kind of blurted out that, like, someday I'd like to start the Uber of charities. And that person was like, well, what does that mean? And I started talking. Like, I don't know where it came from. There was something, it just came out of me. And so I got off the phone and I ran to my computer and I typed down this one-page document. And I still have that one-page document somewhere in Google Drive describing exactly what DonorC is today. And so, I typed out that document and then I started saying, okay, what are the steps? Like, obviously, this is the most gigantic endeavor to get there. But what if I could get one inch closer, what would that look like? Like, what are some of the steps I could take to get a little bit closer to this vision? And I had a lot of people who were very generous with their time and their resources that helped me get off the ground. So conception happened in January and then launch happened in September, almost like exactly 9 months later. And then ever since then, we've been learning how to do the best with what we've been given.
Wow. Well, that's an interesting gestation period.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I thought about that before, the 9 month figure.
Yeah, that's a very interesting term in the womb there. So that is really cool. That just occurred to me.
Yeah.
So now I know you're living in the DC area now. You were in Malawi for 3 years. Where were you raised at, Greg?
Yeah, I was raised in the DC area. I grew up in it's called Fairfax County, and if you look on Wikipedia, it'll tell you it's the second richest county in the entire U.S. So I grew up in an affluent place. I went to private schools growing up. I went to my parents paid for my college. Yeah, I mean, just all things considered, I'm pretty well off. Or I grew up pretty well off.
Yeah.
Went on nice vacations and stuff like that. So it was quite.
You almost told us where you went to college, but you don't have to tell us that, but you almost did.
I'm a proud graduate of Grove City College, which is in northern Pennsylvania. It's a small private Christian school, and I had a great experience there. And actually, they just invited me back to talk a couple months ago. That was a month ago. I went back and I talked, and man, it went so well. And I loved interacting with the students and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was
very cool.
Yeah.
I know they appreciate your example too, from an alum standpoint. Mm-hmm. You're shaking things up a little bit, and that's got to be gratifying for the contribution that they had to put you in a place to do it. So,
yes.
Super cool. Mm-hmm. Super cool. So I don't know this, Gret, and hopefully you won't be hurt me asking, but I think you're less than 30 or you're close to 30. Am I right?
I am 28 and I don't mind you asking. Yeah.
Wow. I'm gratified now that I got pretty close.
That is good. Yeah. And usually people, and I'll, honestly, I'll say thank you, because sometimes between my looks and my voice, sometimes people think I'm quite a bit younger than 28. So you did a good job. Much
thank
better
you,
than most.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I will say this, you know, I was really young looking when I was 21 or 25 or something like that. And let me just say, I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not that young anymore. Yeah. I don't look that young anymore. And I say, you've got to celebrate that for as long as you can. The day does come. You can always look young for your age, but you can't always look young. So you're doing awesome, man. Enjoy it as long as you can.
I'm not complaining at all. It's just one of those things that comes up quite a bit.
Yeah,
I just got engaged like a month ago, and my fiance. Oh,
congratulations!
Yep, thank you. And my fiance, she has the same thing. She also looks younger and kind of gets the same thing. So we're
that's cool.
Two peas.
That's cool. Two peas there. Yeah, you're gonna have a young looking kids downrange as the family comes together. Very cool. Well, thanks for giving us a little bit on your background and your age. And I want to again emphasize and applaud. I really appreciate your courage. I mean, that first step, often in terms of doing something someone's never done before, or there's not a well-worn path for, that can be the most daunting step you take. Summoning the courage, you know, obviously God gives us his grace. We have some courage on board, and we find some more wherever we can get it. We're working against the context that is.
Yes.
And to do something new against a context that is really full, doesn't want anything new. that takes a lot of courage. Thank you for taking those steps.
Well, I'm really fortunate to have had some really great mentors in my life who have encouraged me to do that. And I think it's one of those things where it seems like courage, or it seems like boldness. But the way that I think about it is, I always try and reframe things like 20 years down the line. Like I went to Malawi, Africa, which, you know, that's a big, scary thing. And I left a job that I was really prospering at. But I asked myself, if I project myself 20 years into the future, which will I regret more? Will I regret leaving this job that I'm doing pretty well at and making good money? Or will I regret not going to Malawi and traveling when I go young? I've never met someone who said, I regret leaving a job when I was 23. I've never met someone who's just like, they're hung up on that thing that happened. But I have met dozens of people who say, man, I really regret not traveling when I was younger. And so in some ways it becomes an easier decision. It becomes less courage and more just like logical. Like you're just doing the thing that seems to make sense when you look at it on a long enough time scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you're saying. And I have heard that frame the way you're talking about it. The idea there being most people regret stuff that they didn't do, you know, stepping out.
Yeah.
You know, versus the courage or the forward looking approach that helped you take those steps. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was huge though. I don't want to downplay it either. It was huge going to Malawi. Give us 2 minutes. Now this is a daunting request here. 2 minutes. What did you learn in Malawi? You lived there 3 years. What'd you learn?
I learned many things. I think one of the ones that comes to mind first is I think I have a healthier relationship and a healthier understanding of money. Mm. I think that I grew up in a very affluent place, the second wealthiest county in the U.S., and then I live in the poorest country in the world, and I think I have a better perspective on how money affects people in different ways. Sometimes it affects people because they don't have it, and sometimes it affects people because they do have it. Mm. And I think it's been a. I think that's yeah. I'll start with that. We can start. There's a big discussion here, but that's the main thing. The relationship that people have with money is very interesting to me, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about it.
Well, do you think that? I heard an old friend of mine say one time, you don't have to have money to love it. So I think people can have a sense of affection for things that they don't have, even if it's romantic or at a distance. Mm-hmm. And I think that getting our minds, getting our perspective sorted out when it comes to money is very, very important. Mm-hmm. But for most of us in the States, and I think what most of us don't understand, just talking about stuff I've onboarded in Africa and other places over the years, we don't understand or have any sense of the contrast of what it's like to be poor in the States versus to be poor in rural Africa.
Yeah.
And don't you think that we don't have that? We don't
completely absent. It. Yeah, it doesn't exist. Yeah. We spend quite a bit of time talking about a lot of different things in this country, and some of them are really worthwhile, and some of them are just baffling. Like the fact that there are 500 million people living. There's so many things happening in the rest of the world that seem to be largely ignored by our community here. And I don't want to come across as like I'm being judgmental or whatever, because the truth is that like I had this experience where I lived overseas for 3 years, and that has helped shape how I think about the world. And I probably wouldn't have this perspective unless I had had that experience. And
of course,
most people who have never been overseas, or maybe they just went on a quick mission trip or something like that, it's hard for them to really truly grasp the reality of the 3.5 billion people who live on $2 a day. And so, yeah, I mean, but there's quite a bit of things happening in the world that are, it's just insane. So like, I think of the amount, it's like 500,000 people die from malaria every year. Malaria is a disease that doesn't exist in the US and is completely treatable, but there's 500,000 people who are dying every year from it. There's 600 million people who don't have clean water. Like they drink their water from the same place that their animals drink their waters, like some stream or some pond or something like that. And their kids die. You know, it's just like, these are realities in the world. But like the other half of the world is like watching the Avengers movie. You know, it's like we're so divorced from all of the things that are happening.
Right. I think in a lot of ways we're insulated.
Yes.
Culturally insulated from having a perspective that's broad or in any way comprehensive, in any way far reaching. You know, the bad thing about being deluded is that you don't realize, I'm in a state of delusion. So
that's true.
We can fill up 4 programs from here. You've inspired me, Grit. But have you ever heard of an author named Ronald J. Sider?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I'm holding a book here in my hand. I wish I had the video going. But I've got a book here in my hand that I read some years ago that was super helpful for me when it comes to getting some perspective on this. And this was really after I'd done a little bit of traveling in the world, but I continued on. Ronald J. Sider, I'm hoping that's the way you say his name, wrote a book called Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger. Mm.
I would highly recommend this book.
Yeah, you got to get it, man.
You got to get it. If I was in DC, I'd run this over. We could meet and get a coffee, and I'd hand it off to you.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. But, yeah, I got to check this out.
Yeah, Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger. And if you've got any, if you've already got a good set of coals there, this will throw some wood on the fire. In terms of giving perspective, the guy's got some incredible statistics and a lot of research here. But chapter one is called A Billion Hungry Neighbors. That's chapter one. So I know you're going to go on to find this. I'm sure it's on Kindle or wherever you get your books. But
yeah,
the one I'm holding here is the fifth edition. So it's had, you know, it's a number of updates over the years. Originally, I'm trying to see when it was originally published. This particular copyright is in 97. But I think the original one was actually written before that, like in the
70s. Yeah, I have it in front of me. It's saying 77.
Yeah, so this is 20 years after the original.
Yeah.
He did was faithful to update this content. So there's a lot to learn about the way things were in 77 and the way things have changed. So
they've changed dramatically. That's the other thing that's crazy about what's happening right now is there's massive amounts of improvement. The percentage of the world that didn't have clean water has plummeted from 1977.
Right. Yeah.
Way more people are on the grid. Way more people have electricity. So
I've been in those contexts. The singular thing that punctuated my perspective and basically tore down my defense against this idea was doing a clean water project in rural East Africa and seeing people. I arrived on the site. I was watching people come up to this water source and get water and take it back to the house. Just like, you know, when people say, people hear you say, it's just, you know, people are getting water, same place their cattle are getting water. That is somehow we've got some built-in defense systems, right? We've got these, what do you call it in some Star Wars movie or something? We've got these shields up, you know, and that kind of talk gets just automatically deflected. But it's real. And we don't realize that. I remember we were there, we're staged up, and now it's time to begin deconstruction of the water source they're drinking from. And I just said, you know what? I'm doing this. So I grabbed my shovel and I jumped in.
Yeah.
And within 2 minutes, I can tell you, I had a life-changing experience right there. Mm-hmm. What happened was I became intimately familiar with everything that was in the water source.
Yeah,
I mean, it was I'll spare people who are
easily nauseated
the detail, but it was, you know, in rural environments like this, highly agrarian, everything that's in the field ends up in the water source. Mm-hmm. Anytime it rains, typically these springs and other things that people are getting their water from are at the edge of a field and typically lying a little lower. So whatever's in the field with the cows and the goats and the sheep and the corn and the whatever else is in that water source.
Yeah.
I had a life-changing experience there, Gret. I can tell you for sure. And I went on to continue to have a relationship with people I've met there, and we've worked together more than 10 years now from that time. So thank God it wasn't just a punctuation on a short-term trip that faded in memory. We've continued to work here, and I've seen the family that we work with there. I've seen them lose children to to waterborne disease, and I've seen them lose their health. And
think about what you're saying. The idea of losing a child in America, that is the most horrific thing that can happen to a person. That is everyone's greatest fear, and that is sadly, that's a common experience for people who don't have clean water.
For sure. Now, we completed that water source, and I was back 10 years, maybe it was 9 years when I went last time, from the time that we protected the water source. I revisited the water source. I was so blessed. I mean, I was brought to tears as a little girl came down and got water from the source.
Oh, wow.
And, and left out protected clean water. My friends over at Hydrating Humanity is who we did that project with, and it was life-changing. I highly, highly, highly recommend something like that to everyone, because I think it impacted my perspective. And then the ongoing relationship, my friends that we work with, they're a local pastor. We just had him in the States and in Mexico for a little tour. He'd never been on a plane before, but he came to visit us. He was telling me while he was here that his wife gave birth to 9 children.
Wow.
And 4 of them are living. So you say that, you know, the worst thing in the world has happened to him 5 times.
Yeah.
From malaria, from waterborne disease, from
things that would never happen. Yeah, from things that you and I have no threat of. Like, I don't ever have to worry about my water being dirty. I don't ever have to worry about malaria. Even if I, even in the crazy chance that a mosquito got on a plane from Africa and flew over to America and bit me and gave me malaria, I'd still be fine. I would go to a hospital and they would pump me full of what's called LAR and I would be fine. And so it's just the level of disparity is there. And I guess I want to emphasize that I feel strongly about these things. I'm very, I get really worked up when I think about them, and I feel passionately about trying to get people to understand it. Uh-huh. But I know that it's not appropriate to, you know, come down as super judgmental.
No,
I don't want to come across that way, because I don't think that that's the way to win people over.
No.
And so I
don't think you're doing that, Gret. I mean,
I try not to, but sometimes I definitely do. So I have to be careful.
Yeah. I know what is, and hopefully me too. I mean, I feel very strongly about this stuff, and we have an investment in rural East Africa, and we are a part of a family there. And we're doing some stuff over a decade here that has changed our lives. And I think it's also changed the lives of our friends there. And we thank God for it. But, you know, Western Union is not the best way. Let me just say that for sure. But, going back to what you guys are trying to do, you know, it's getting some perspective, and it's hard to reach over, press the button, and turn down the shields that deflect these kinds of comments. And it does. I think the subject can be so big for people. People feel so small in the face of 2 billion hungry or billion hungry neighbors or whatever. People feel small in front of that, and they don't feel like they can act. And I think that's one thing that makes me really inspired by what you guys are doing, because you're giving people an opportunity to act at the one-on-one level with donor C. And the fact that they're getting a chance to see impact and get that feedback loop, like you say, which is so often missing when you give into the blind, you know, if you call it that, I don't know what you call it.
the black hole.
Yeah. Tell us now, I don't know if we talked about that on this or on the leadership moment, but tell us a little bit again, just summarize for us what happens at Donor C when I go on Donor C and I pick something that I feel, hey, I'm feeling this, I feel led, or I feel good about doing something on in this particular person's case. What happens?
Well, okay, so from a donor's perspective, they go to DonorC.com or they download our app or however they want to use DonorC, and they show up to the website, and there's a feed of projects that they can search through. The projects are posted by on-the-ground aid workers. So maybe there's someone, like I have you here even right in front of me, a guy named Michael Kilar. He works in Thailand, and he helps women who have been in they've formerly been sex workers who usually have kids, and they want to get out of that industry. They want a better job. They want a better life. They want to live more in accordance with how God would want them to live. And so they're trying to get away from that. And so there's a bunch of projects about helping these women or these families who have been in this situation or the kids of the women. And you can go and you can search through those and give to those. Or there's a lady named Amy Hathaway, who's in Tanzania, and she works with babies who are on the brink of starvation. Often the mother died in childbirth, or perhaps maybe even was abandoned, sadly. That doesn't happen as often as the childbirth death, but the baby's on the brink of starvation and needs formula milk, and so she provides formula milk. And that's like, formula milk seems like the most mundane thing that you could buy. Like, it's at the bottom shelf of some grocery store somewhere, and it seems like just, it's like this, it's just not, it doesn't seem like a big deal. But the truth is, formula milk like transforms a person's life forever. So if they don't have it, then they have all sorts of developmental problems as they're growing up. Like, that, those early stages, those early few months of those kids' lives, they are very, a lot of development is happening in that, in those moments, and a lot of stunting can happen if they don't get formula milk in those early moments. And so providing that for these kids is literally, you're like changing the next several decades of their lives just by this small little donation. Anyway, so Amy Hathaway is another person posting projects. And so there's just a feed of different people, different aid workers posting projects, and they all have their own personality. They all have their own types of projects that they're working on, and you can follow them, and you can get notifications whenever they post a project. And yeah, that's the general idea. I mean, you just go on there and you search through all of the different possibilities, and you give to people who are in need, and you give to real people. I mean, you're really, really helping. The money, the $25 that you're sending with your credit card virtually online, is turning into some kind of thing over on the other side of the world that's actually helping a real person, that they're going to get it in their hands and it's going to change their life. So It's a powerful thing.
Wow. Absolutely. And, you know, giving into the blind and all of the sort of, you guys have erased the distance from one end to the other.
Yeah.
Certainly invisibility, but also in a lot of compression too, in terms of administrative toll and all those kind of things that often gets imposed upon charity or giving or whatever. The administrative toll, you know, is scary in some cases. But what you guys have done is you've kind of, with the virtualization of the world we're in, you've brought those points really close together, both in visibility and in impact.
Yeah.
And I can say personally, I have been involved in this kind of effort for a long time. And I remember somebody sitting me down and saying, you cannot imagine the kind of impact that you're something small to you did, because the purchasing power of the dollar against foreign currencies can be mind-numbing, the kind of impact you can have, which also escapes us just in our lack of, you know, lack of awareness, I guess. Now, I could keep going, Greg, but we're running out of road here. I really appreciate you coming. I could talk in so much more detail about my own personal experience, and I know you've had a bunch of experiences that have brought you to this place. Really appreciate you getting on here with us, and I think it will be meaningful. If someone wants to, again, to reach out to you or to find out more about what you're doing, of course, we wanted to go to DonorC.com, I believe it is. Is that right?
That's it.
And we want them to check out the stories there. We want them to find out what they can do, maybe to get involved. If they want to know more about you, or maybe somebody wants to reach out to you to have you speak to their group or something like that, where do we send them?
If they're interested in specifically like having me on the podcast or doing a speaking engagement, you can email admin@donorc.com. If you just want to reach out to me and ask me a quick question, then just find me on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or one of those platforms. And it should be pretty easy to whatever you prefer. I'm active on all of it. So
right. And Gret Glyer is GRETGLYER.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, how do we get a look at that TED stage video, Gret? How are we going
to
do that?
Okay. Yeah. I would say the best way to do it is to type in Gret Glyer TEDx into YouTube, and you'll find it there. And I can send you a link if you want to include it in the notes.
Okay. I would love to include that in the notes if you will send me the link. Once again, Gret, thank you so much for being here. Let's do get together on a future show, because we've got more energy than we have time. I really appreciate it. I think it's going to be impactful. And Lord, we ask you to open the eyes of people to see things how they are, not how they appear, and help us to not only see them, but take them to heart and act as a result. Gret, thank you so much. Blessings to you, man. Look forward to catching you downrange. And hey, man, I need to get those details on becoming getting in on that we funder.
Yeah, let me mention the link real quick. It's wefunder.com/donorc. And so we'll see how much is left of it. But yeah, I even got an investment, a little notification while we were doing this podcast. So it's going fast.
I'm gonna check it out. Yeah. I'm gonna check it out here shortly. Thank you so much, Grant. Really appreciate it, man. Blessings to you. Thanks for your efforts and your life.
Sounds good. Thank you. Take care.
This podcast made possible through the partnership of Engaging Mission Show, bringing missions home, and encouraging you to hear a message, make connections, and take action. Find out more at engagingmissions.com. Thanks for joining us for the FX Missions podcast from the forefront. If you'd like to find out more about FX Missions, please do so at our blog, fxmissions.com. Quite a bit of content out there. We hope you enjoy it. Also, if you'd like to rate us on iTunes or whatever podcast service you use, we would really appreciate it. And find out more about today's guest at our Facebook page. Just search for From the Forefront on Facebook. If you know of someone who should be featured on From the Forefront because of their forefront missions experience or exploits, please reach out to us at info@fxmissions.com. Thanks again for joining us. And until next time, I'm Scott McClelland, and you have a good one.